Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Yes, indeed it is. Annie's voice deepened over the weekend. All these dudes in here all the time. I guess all these guys. You got all these guys in here. Katie keeps an eye on us, though. Annie will be back on Wednesday. This is Tim Jones. You just heard me last night here on the Tim Jones Show at 97.1 FM Talk, like I am every Sunday from 7 to 9 p.m. And basically we're going to have a continuance of my show last night, which was the Election Day preview.
Nice.
Katie, we've been talking about election days we've been talking about Election Day 2020 for almost 2 years straight.
Oh, gosh.
Because, of course, we've been getting ready for it. And the national media has been ready for it because they can't wait to try to defeat Donald Trump. But tomorrow, Katie, is like the appetizer board,
mm-hmm.
right? This is where we kind of set the table and we get ready. When things become much more in focus. Now, we know who the big top of the ticket candidates are. It's Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. But beyond that, there's so many questions out there in so many states about who's going to be running for some of these other offices, which are going to be just as critical to the transition of power, if there is one, this fall. I'm talking about all the U.S. Senate races. I'm talking about your state legislatures. And I'm talking about, 2020 might as well be the year of weird, because we've got two whacked out local elections where people like Mark Cox and Tim Jones and Ryan Recker last week and so many of others are saying, take a Democratic ballot.
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Yeah. What is that all about? Well, we're going to talk about that today as well. That's for all you folks in the city of St. Louis and the county of St. Louis. If you're anywhere else, and you're a true blue Democrat or a hardcore Republican, I'm really not talking to you on those issues, but I am talking to all of you voters here in the city of St. Louis and the county of St. Louis, because you have two major problems, and their names are Kim Gardner and Sam Page. And I know people on all sides of the political spectrum, and Katie and I were talking about this before the show, we know people who are not on the political spectrum
mm-hmm.
who have had it with Kim Gardner and Sam Page. So we're going to see if those feelings of anxiety and fed upness and everything turns into something at the ballot box tomorrow or not.
I hope so.
And many of us do. So we'll talk about that as well. Like I said, tomorrow is Election Day. It is Tuesday, August 4th. The prelude is finally here. And let me tell you, Katie, after tomorrow, if it wasn't already game on, they're going to be throwing out the first pitch beginning Wednesday, August 5th, because it's going to be a long, long marathon sprint to November 4th.
But can you believe we're already here? We're here in Missouri. Primary election day is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Can you believe that?
It's weird because it seems like it took forever. But on the other hand, it's like I flip the calendars. We still have some paper calendars lying around the house.
Sure.
And I flipped
going
them.
Going old school.
I flipped them over the weekend. I was like, wow, how did August happen? We've been so locked down and so encapsulated over the last few months that it seems like it's been one long march, hasn't it?
Oh my gosh.
Like
yeah.
The month of March has gone on forever. Because that's kind of like when the world stopped for many of us. Mm-hmm. And with very few exceptions of a couple of intervals of changes of scenery here and there. Not even I. And I'm a traveling Wilbury, right? I mean, the last few years, I've been kind of here, there, and everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I've been very few places over the last 6 months. I took the family up to Michigan in early July. Man, like 5 or 6 weeks ago now. Seems like an eternity ago. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like being in Missouri, except there was a lot more lakes, even more lakes. And
yes.
It was a little cooler. It was a lot less humid. But it was basically a change of scenery. We drove. I have not set foot into an airport since, I think, I was in March. Mid-March, I came back from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
That's been it. So even for someone like me who's been so used to travel the last, I don't know, decade or so, I've been largely at the homestead and in and around the St. Louis area. It's been about it.
Yeah.
You escaped. You got a weekend furlough and went to Kansas City recently.
I did. I went to Kansas City for a little bit.
Must have felt like you went on the other side of the world.
It was wild. Same type of deal here in St. Louis, though. Everything shut down. Only things that were really open were the gas stations. We did a backyard barbecue. Everybody was in the backyard outside.
Mm-hmm.
Well away from one another, but it's just bizarre. It's so crazy. I mean, and it's even wild to try to plan something for the future because we just don't know.
Right. What are you going to be able to do? What are you not going to be able to do? My friends and I, a lot of us share the joke that most of this will be over and done on November 5th. We kind of say that tongue in cheek, but I think a lot of the hyper hysterical histrionics will end. There will still be concern about this virus. Absolutely. There'll still be precautions being made. But I think the nonstop drumbeat of death from the liberal media will end one way or the other the day after the national election. You know,
even if Trump wins, it'll stop because, man,
I think they'll have to find something else at that point, you know, because they're kind of stuck with him for 4 years and we're going to conquer the virus in the next 4 years one way or the other. You look at Sweden and there was a chart I can't wait to talk to. Well, let me tell you who I got today, because that has something to do with what the chart I was going to tell you about. So we're going to have a frequent friend of the show. Is he on every Monday,
every
Dr. Scott?
Monday. Okay,
yeah.
Dr. Scott Hardiman.
I've heard him many times. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to speaking with him right after this first break around 12:25. Dr. Scott Hardiman, who is a physician at Gateway ENT and Urgent Specialist, he is going to check in with us on what's going on locally and regionally here in the state of Missouri and the Metro East about how what's going on. We keep hearing cases, surge.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that, but when you put it in perspective with overall numbers, Missouri still looks very tame compared to even Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was looking at that because they've been yelling and screaming, the post-disgrace has, and some of the other liberal media, have been yelling and screaming about our case surge, and, you know, Dr. Sam Page and his crew have as well. So I'm like, okay, what does that really mean? So I looked at Illinois. They're right next door, right? Missouri, as of Friday, had around 1,200 deaths total. Illinois is approaching 8,000.
I had no idea.
Well, of course you didn't, Katie, because we got to yell and scream about Missouri because we have a very important county executives race here. And so I really think everything is politicized these days. So Illinois has like 80% more deaths than us. And their caseload, we've got like Missouri has around 50,000 total known cases, right? Illinois has nearly 180,000.
My gosh.
Nearly four times as many. But I don't hear much about Illinois or Chicago at all about having problems with coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. It's all hush-hush because J.B. Pritzker wants us to be hush-hush.
Exactly. It's on a need-to-know basis. But we sure know about it here. So I'm going to ask Dr. Scott Hardiman to kind of put that all in perspective. You know, I want to know, how are our emergency rooms doing? How are our ICUs doing? How is our ventilator capacity? What does our death rate look like? Those are the important questions. You can't just scream and yell cases and have that be the end of your metric system. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to know it all. Jean Evans knows a lot. She knows it all. She's the executive director of the Missouri Republican Party. She's going to talk to us about primary election day, which is tomorrow, Tuesday, August 4th. Folks, whatever you're going to do, however you're going to do it, make sure you vote tomorrow if you haven't already voted absentee. The polls open tomorrow at 6 a.m. They close at 7 p.m. Especially in this world of working from home and virtual offices, you should be able to find 20 minutes to run down to your local precinct and vote. Put your mask on. Mm-hmm. Wash your hands before and after. It will be safe. You won't be sorry. You need to have your voices be heard. Let's have some good turnout here in the Show Me State. Jean Evans will be talking to us about what's on the ballot from governor on down. I'm going to talk about some of our local issues in our 2 o'clock hour with one of our great mayors, the mayor of my city, the city of Eureka. I'll get to him in just a second. Stephen Moore will join us at 107, as he does every Monday. He is got a lot of stuff going on. He always has tons of projects. The one thing that I get every morning in my email box is his Committee to Unleash Prosperity email. And there's always excellent stuff in there about the economy, coronavirus, the presidential race, et cetera, and so forth. And it's always happy good news. He's the happy economist, right? He's the happy warrior. And instead of the doom and gloom you get every day, the death and destruction from the liberal media, Steve puts it all, he boils it down to reality. He doesn't sugarcoat anything, but he also tries to show you the positive signs of what's going on. And he had a chart last week about Sweden. Remember how early on everybody said, oh, Sweden's doing it wrong. Sweden was once the darling of the liberal intelligentsia because everybody thought they were this socialist dream come true. And then until we found out during the Democrat presidential primary that Sweden has basically been moving away from socialism and back into free market capitalism, especially with their health care. Anyway, Sweden was attacked for not doing universal lockdowns, not doing universal mask mandates, not shutting their schools down, not eviscerating their economy, and just being like, all right, bring it on. And they got hurt hard in the beginning. And the chart was the death rate in Sweden from the very beginning to where we are now. And the climb up is like Mount Everest. It goes straight up. It's the hockey stick, right? But then on the backside of it is a pretty steady, gentle, gradual ski slope. Going down to last week where their death rate as of last week was averaging 0 to 1 death a day.
Wow.
They've crushed the coronavirus. They have the herd immunity. And I want to ask Stephen Moore about that, along with everything else going on. There's this battle going on in D.C. about, are we going to have another relief package or not? So I'm sure Stephen Moore will have plenty of opinions on that. He joins us in the 1 o'clock hour, followed by our Missouri State Treasurer, Scott Fitzpatrick, a very good friend of mine. He did a fly around last week about the horrors and evils of Medicaid expansion. I know the commercials look so glitzy and glamorous and gorgeous. They are not telling you the whole truth. State Treasurer Scott Fitzpatrick, former House Budget Chairman, will fill us in on the real economic impact of Medicaid expansion, which is Amendment 2, which everybody gets to vote on in the state of Missouri tomorrow. I'm urging a no vote. We'll see what comes of that. In the 2 o'clock hour, around 2:26, my good friend Sean Flower, the city of Eureka's mayor, will talk to us about his perspective on coronavirus on kind of a local region, on kind of a local governance level with the mayors that he talks to every week on this, and why in the world hardcore lifelong Republicans like Sean Flower, Mark Cox, Tim Jones, Ryan Record, and Tim Fitch of the county council are urging you to vote for Mark Montavani tomorrow. What is happening? The earth is spinning out of control on its axis. We have got a giant big show today. Dr. Scott Hardiman will join us next. Thanks for joining us on the Annie Fry Show today. Keep it right here all afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Dr. Fauci, do protests increase the spread of the virus?
Do protests increase the spread of the virus? I think I can make a general statement.
Well, 500,000 protesters on June 6th alone. Yeah. I'm just asking, that number of people, does it increase the spread of the virus?
Crowding together, particularly when you're not wearing a mask, contributes to the spread of the virus.
Well, he didn't want to answer the question, but he had to answer the question. And I know that Congressman Jim Jordan is a bit of a lightning rod. That's probably putting it mildly.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we wish we had different messengers for things. But Jordan's point was extremely valid in that Fauci has had an opinion about this virus and what it affects on everything under the sun, from churches to dating to goggles to you name it. But he couldn't give an opinion about assembling in massive throngs of people standing shoulder to shoulder, wearing masks, not wearing masks, you know, sweating, perspiring in the July heat. He couldn't really give a straightforward answer to that when it was very simple. Yes, they do, you know. And before we bring Scott Hardiman in, Dr. Birx was asked a similar thing. And Katie, if we could play number nine, she got into a little back and forth about kind of a similar question about, again, very clear, where's the virus? And so here's Dr. Birx.
What we're seeing today is different from March and April. It is extraordinarily widespread. It's into the rural as equal urban areas. And to everybody who lives in a rural area, you are not immune or protected from this virus. And that's why we keep saying, no matter where you live in America, you need to wear a mask and socially distance.
Yeah, I just think she calls balls and strikes a little better than Fauci. Mm-hmm. I always feel like Fauci's trying to give an answer that maybe he thinks that someone wants to hear, versus Dr. Birx just gives the answer.
She hasn't been in the limelight either, so that gives me a little bit of hope for her credibility,
right,
you know?
Right. Well, let's bring in our next guest. He calls balls and strikes pretty well every Monday here on the Annie Fry Show. None other than Dr. Scott Hardiman, physician at Gateway ENT and urgent specialist. Dr. Hardiman, thanks for joining us on the Annie Fry Show. Tim Jones in for Annie today. I think she'll be back with you next Monday.
Thanks, Tim. Nice to speak with you today.
Yeah, great to have you on. So, Doctor, let's start with kind of the it's Monday. People are just getting back from the weekend, so let's give them the 30,000 foot in from what you're seeing this week as begin this week. How's the St. Louis region doing as far as cases, but more importantly, how are our hospitals doing? How are they handling things? You know, where are we in general here in St. Louis and the Metro East?
Sure. So overall, I would say there was a backlog of some reporting that took place with some data dumps and numbers of tests and cases that were done that had been accumulated for a while. So that kind of created a number of cases that added to the system that may have been more spread out over time. Shall we say they give a snapshot that there things are a lot worse, but it seems like in the past day or two, the case and the positivity rate and the case numbers have started to level off and or decline a little bit. As far as the hospitals go, I think the moving averages are staying steady or decreasing as far as number of admissions, down a little bit. The severity of the illness, clearly today, as far as what we're seeing in the hospital, seems to be less than it was back in March, April, and May. The number of folks in the ICU, the number of folks ventilated are significantly less than what we had before. So, you know, I think that it's a very dynamic situation, but I think that we're going to see some stabilization in numbers. The positivity rate is up a little bit. It's around 7-ish percent or so now. At a low point, we were around 5%. That's the number or percentage of people that are testing positive based upon the total number of cases and gives you a little sense of the penetrance into the community. But overall, I think we're maybe rounding the curve a little bit here. And if people continue to, you know, monitor their own symptoms, the biggest thing you can do is if you're ill, don't go out in public, you know, do the right thing and just don't pass it to other folks.
And doctor, how would you say our overall capacity is? I mean, are the hospitals, are they stressed at all, or do they have capacity? Are they able to handle kind of this new influx, that this little mini surge, I guess, that we're kind of seeing here in the region over the last few weeks?
Yeah, it's different. You know, you always have to dissect that a little bit because hospitals generally run at a pretty good capacity. You know, ICU capacity for most hospitals there from a financial perspective, they usually target around 80 to 85% capacity. So where we were before, obviously, we shut everything down. I mean, there were just no elective care was taking place whatsoever. So there was a big glut of ICU beds and staff and et cetera that we had, and then kind of found that maybe that wasn't quite necessary, that we could accommodate these surges as we started to feel through our way on how severe this thing was. So we're different now because the hospitals are back open, elective cases are taking place, and so ICUs are, you know, and have a number of patients within them for other related things. So that there's still margin in there. There's still ability to accommodate an influx, and I think that most of the hospitals are positioned in such a way that they can staff down some of the other floors and be able to make room for patients if they need to be admitted. But I think we're fine in the St. Louis area right now.
That's great to know. And a great point, too. I've also heard that about general hospital capacity. You know, they're never at 100, but they're also not always very low. Like you said, I've heard they're generally in the 80, 85% range. So
that's right.
That's a good point to make. What about, let me ask you about kind of what's new with handling the virus as far as, like, let's talk therapeutics first. I know we don't have a vaccine yet. I want to ask you maybe about that in a minute, but what are we doing anything new in the profession with therapeutics? You hear a lot about, you know, hydroxychloroquine, which has become such a political football, but I've also heard about remdesivir, some other things. What is there any developing science on treatment of this?
Yeah, I think the things that continue to get the most press, of course, remdesivir is going into yet another phase of trials, and I believe they're beginning to trial some inhaled or nasal version of that for earlier treatment, more in an outpatient sector because it's currently IV and very expensive. A lot of what was being used from that drug is backlog of drug that was kept from Ebola time period when it was doing some of its initial studies. And so they're trying to ramp up production. You know, they've sort of figured out ways to have some manufacturing of that overseas as well. But I think a lot of it stems from intervening with more appropriate management from a ventilatory standpoint, using dexamethasone, using remdesivir. There's a few other drugs that are getting used sort of off-label here and there. And things are every day. There's new information that we're learning from this from across the world. You know, hydroxychloroquine still gets used outpatient. Some states allow its prescription more than others. Others have really kind of clamped down on that. But that continues to be a political hot potato. And it is interesting to look at all the studies out there, and people should be able to form their own opinions on that. And doctors and patients should be able to decide what's most appropriate in their particular condition. But it is interesting to see countries that adopted it widely early on who have you know, lower case fatality rates than countries that did not. And it at least raises the question that we should continue to look into that. And honestly, from a physician's perspective, I want all these things to work. Mm-hmm. We don't have to put our eggs in one basket. The most important thing is we drive this thing down, get our society back open again, get kids back in school, and try and get back to some sense of normal. And we're all desperate for that.
And how about vaccine news? You know, every week we hear a multitude of stories about various pharmaceutical companies working on things. I've heard Moderna's name. I've heard Merck, Pfizer. What's sort of the latest on the vaccine front that's come into your sphere of knowledge?
Yeah, so I think the United States has now funded about $5 billion in research into Warp Speed to try and develop vaccines globally. I think probably the two biggest things that have hit the media in the past week is the positive results from a study at Oxford. And then, of course, Moderna is entering into their phase 3 trials, and I believe they're enrolling patients from the St. Louis area as well. The Moderna vaccine is a newer concept in vaccine called an mRNA vaccine, and that's going to be – there's a lot of a learning curve with that, not just from a efficacious perspective, but also safety-wise. And, you know, there were quite a few side effects with that that kind of made national headlines when – Bill Gates was questioned about some of the side effect profile of the vaccines, and it was sort of dismissed a little bit. But all of that is important. You know, the FDA has its fingers into a lot of things. We're dealing with this right now, but it's very important that we make sure a vaccine is safe and efficacious, not just one versus the other. So those trials are, I mean, they are moving quickly, no question. But we've pre-purchased a number of vaccines already. It's kind of interesting to think you're pre-purchasing something that hasn't been proven just yet. But the hope is that will be the case. Essentially, we're pre-placing an order for vaccines that the efficacious nature of it is hopefully going to be proven.
So the idea would be if and when a vaccine's ready, the healthcare system is going to have the delivery systems available to deliver that vaccine, I would imagine, quicker than ever before in our nation's history.
Yes, although it's not quick. I mean, I think that's the reality of the situation, that getting it manufactured, certainly if we end up with the Moderna vaccine, the mRNA vaccine, it's a big lift to produce that. There's some new technology used in that that require some expensive technology to develop it and to mass produce it. So if that becomes the vaccine, I think certainly, like any vaccine, once it's in physicians' hands and health departments' hands, you can get them administered relatively quickly. But there's probably a ramp-up period of time in production. My guess is it'll probably go to those most vulnerable, the category of individuals with comorbid issues and advanced age, et cetera, that tend to have a worse outcome, then move into the healthcare sector and first responders, military. I mean, my guess is it'll be a while until it percolates out as an option for the general rank and file in the community.
Gotcha. Speaking to Dr. Scott Hardiman, physician at Gateway ENT and urgent specialist, urgentspecialist.com. Doctor, you mentioned schools, hot topic right now, not only across the St. Louis area, but across the entire nation, if not the world. And it seems to cross political, demographic, philosophical boundaries. A lot of people most of the people I hear are coming down on the side of, we got to have some form of in-person schooling, but I thought I'd ask you, where do you come down on that right now for our region? There's been it seems like every school district's doing something a little different. What say you on planning for schools and the importance of getting kids back into school?
Well, I'm a big advocate of schools opening in person. I think having three kids that span ages from 8 to 17, I think it's important for them, not just from an academic perspective, but a socialization perspective, especially the younger kids as well. I don't question or doubt that there's a desire from all parties involved to try and do the right thing here. But, you know, again, these viral illnesses, respiratory illnesses, we're going to get into respiratory and flu season, and it's going to be difficult to handle this situation. The schools that I've been directly involved with, I think, have done a fantastic job of developing a contingency plan and workflow in order to handle these things. But it really is going to be where the rubber meets the road when you start having those first and second cases pop up and how you handle that. Do you shut everything down? Do you try and isolate those that people came directly in contact with, the kids or the teachers for that matter, and try and get back open as quickly as possible? But ultimately, I think most of the schools have an option that if they do go back in person, that if the families are uncomfortable, that they have the virtual option as well. And that's really probably where things should be, is that families need to be able to decide what's best for them. There's good data from around the world, though, of schools that are open earlier than us, that are further down the timeline, that haven't seen huge upticks in the number of cases. Mm-hmm. There's quite a bit of evidence that there's not a lot of spread among younger children about 12 years of age. And below, you know, certainly some daycare studies that took place in New York City during that time period without tremendous increase in cases or really any to that degree within that younger population as well. And daycares have remained open a lot of this. So I get it. I understand why teachers, administration, families, parents, everyone are concerned about this. But, you know, every day is a new day. And I think we just have to keep taking steps with a smart plan in place and give parents the option of participating at a level that they feel is most comfortable for, you know, for their needs and their kids as well.
And why do children not seem to be susceptible as much to this respiratory illness? I know respiratory illnesses in the past have affected kids in different ways, some more seriously, some less. This seems to have such a low impact on kids, especially of the younger ages. Is there science developing around that yet? Do we know why?
Yeah, I think there is. Again, it's really early. You could make a counter argument to say, well, kids have been kind of shut down out of society and not exposed to things as much during that initial wave of shutdowns. But the science is catching up to that, saying that really isn't necessarily the whole reason that we didn't see a lot of younger individuals with this. We focus a lot of our discussions about antibody immunity to this and how vaccines center around that. But our T cell immunity, which can be in kids, can be a little more robust. Seems to create an environment where it's almost a dead-end vector in the younger kids, where the virus, you know, they get exposed to it, they have mild to no symptoms, they essentially kill off the vast majority of the viral load, so it just doesn't transmit to other kids their age group or to older adults. So there is, the science is beginning to catch up with that it seems as if the level of immunity is just different in younger kids. You could also make the argument, too, and this is a novel or new coronavirus. The coronavirus is nothing new. You know, it's a common cold virus. And so Initially, there was thought to be no carryover immunity to that, but I think there's some beginning to be a little bit of evidence that perhaps kids that are getting a lot of colds and coronavirus are passing these things around, that they have the ability. I mean, our immune system is very smart. We're faced with things that we don't recognize every day, and we can develop an immune response to that. Your T cells can present that to your B cells to make antibodies to it, even if your antibody levels have initially fallen. And so the immune system isn't leaving us out there in left field by any means at this point. We've got a mechanism in place in our body to try and fight off infections. It's just that when things are new and they're more aggressive and they cause these massive inflammatory responses, you have to be cognizant of how to manage those things once the illness really takes hold too.
Fantastic. Dr. Scott Hardiman, thanks so much as always for that incredibly comprehensive roundup. We appreciate it. As always, speaking with you on Monday here on the Annie Fry Show. And you stay healthy and well yourself. Best to you and your family, doctor. And thanks so much for the update today.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. That was great getting that update from Dr. Scott Hardiman at Gateway ENT and Urgent Specialist. I mean, just the facts, ma'am, right? And we got it all from
exactly.
Dr. Scott there. And that's very fascinating because he restated, I think, in an excellent clinical objective fashion, many of the things we're hearing that people are urging from the political side. But he broke it down and explained to us why kids are, number one, not as susceptible to this. And also, I don't know if you heard during that explanation he gave me, they're not viral transmitters either. They're basically dead-end vectors. So this theory that everybody should be freaked out about going back into a school if you're an adult doesn't hold a lot of water based on that data and science we just heard from Dr. Scott Hardiman. Hey, we'll shift gears back to the political front, talk to Gene Evans, the executive director of the Missouri Republican Party, about tomorrow's big primary election day here in St. Louis and across the Show Me State. Gene Evans will have all the news we need to know. Keep it right here at 97.1 FM.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And that's why we at the RNC, we launched Protect the Vote. We're trying to protect the voter integrity laws that are already on the books. We do not want ballot harvesting, which is what Democrats are pushing on a nationwide scale, where third parties can just pick up and be responsible for ballots. And we don't want to send out ballots to inactive voters. There's an absentee process that works, that you have to request a ballot. You have to put an ID in when you're a first-time absentee voter. Those are common sense, bipartisan safeguards, mind you, that have been on the federal law books for a very long time. We're fighting to uphold those because you cannot have a situation where you're sending out millions more ballots than there are eligible voters in this country. And that's what Democrats have done in Clark County, Nevada. And you saw the results. They piled up in the trash. They were on the street for anyone to to pick up. And we cannot allow that to happen come November when Democrats are demanding we won't have the results till Christmas.
Yeah, it was Liz Harrington last night or this weekend. I had her on last night on the Tim Jones Show. She'd be a great guest for Annie sometime, Katie. Mm-hmm. She's fantastic at Liz RNC. And I'm going to bring in our spokesperson for the entire state of Missouri next, Gene Evans, the executive director of the Missouri Republican Party. Gene, welcome to the show. How much, Gene, does this assault on our electoral system terrify you as the executive director of the Republican Party here in the state?
Well, just look at how hard they're fighting for it. I mean, that should tell you something. And these secret meetings and what they're doing and all the illegal voters. And now we have up in, I think it's New Jersey, where we have 20,000 votes that have to be discarded, and they still have election results from a primary that was almost 2 months ago.
Right.
Like, we can't do that. I mean, remember how disruptive it was when we had the hanging Chad, you know, back in 2000? Was that a lot long ago? Mm-hmm. So we need safe and fair elections. And I think it's important. The president has highlighted this, but I think it's important for your listeners to understand the difference between a mailed-in absentee vote and these massive mail-outs where they just send ballots to all these people. And these people don't even have to prove who they are. In Missouri, with some legislation that was just passed, you can request an absentee ballot, but they are individually notarized and postmarked. And if they're not, they don't count. So they've chosen a system here in Missouri that can keep people safe if they don't feel safe going to the polls, if they're immunocompromised or if they're elderly or whatever that is, if they're sick, which is very different than having a mass mailing where everybody gets these, you know, these ballots just show up in their mailbox and you don't even have to prove who you are. Forget voter ID. This is like, you could be anybody signing these things.
Yes.
And it's rife with fraud. The president is right to call it out. And this is another way that the Democrats know they can't beat our president fairly. So they go after him, just like they did with that phony investigation. And now, I'm sorry, I'm getting all fired up here. Now they're trying to do this because they know they can't win. Well, they can't win if they play fair.
And, Gene, the ballot harvesting, which is essentially what you're describing as well, which is legal in the state of California, is illegal, and I think in most of the other states. That's a process, Gene, by which they basically will just keep counting ballots after Election Day until they get the result they want, right?
Yeah, and well, that's why California is such a mess. But really, what we need legislation to put an end to that. And to have fair elections where your vote counts. It's not watered down by all these illegal votes coming in and being counted for months after the election. I mean, there's no everyone knows that there's an election in November. You got plenty of time to get your ballot in. Letting these votes come in afterwards, or I think it's in California that you can mail it in up to the day of the election. So you've already got a problem there. And I don't know about you. I don't know if there's any of your listeners ever lost anything in the mail, but it does happen or it comes in later. We got a piece of mail at the Missouri Republican Party not long ago that had a check in it that was dated from 2016. So it took 4 years to arrive in our mailbox. So I personally, if I have to vote absentee, I go and vote in person absentee. I know some people can't do that, but get it done early. And at least in Missouri, we're doing it the right way, I would say.
Absolutely. Talk about counting votes. We're going to be watching the vote count very carefully last night on a huge issue that you and I have talked about before. Just want to remind people about Amendment 2. I just got your Missouri GOP alert on that, Gene, and great quote in there from someone you and I both served with, former Speaker Todd Richardson, who's now the Missouri Medicaid director. He says, "There will be a tremendous cost to Medicaid expansion and costs that, frankly, the state doesn't have." Gene, isn't that what it comes down to? Liberals in our state, the far left, thinks that money grows on trees. What they're really advocating for is to harm public education or to massively raise taxes. Isn't that what Amendment 2 is going to do?
Yeah, it is. It is. And what they don't tell you is that Missouri is already one of the most generous states in the country when it comes to Medicaid. So if you're a family of four making $76,000, $78,000, your kids are eligible for Medicaid. So we're already very generous with kids, with people with disabilities. This is expanding it, changing our constitution to give free health care to able-bodied adults. Mm. This program is designed for those who are most vulnerable, people who have disabilities. It is very important that we take care of those who, for some misfortune, are not able to take care of themselves, or they have something, you know, supporting people with disabilities so that they can live and work and thrive. And many of us have loved ones who suffer from disabilities. This could impact them, because now we're going to offer free health care to all these people who are able-bodied adults. And it's just an expansion of the nanny state and the government telling us what to do, taking our hard-earned tax dollars and putting them to work for people who have not purchased insurance for themselves. And it does not, let me repeat this, it does not solve the health care problem in Missouri. We do have issues with health insurance that became just exploded when they expanded Obamacare, and I just think they'll get worse with this, not to mention the budget constraints, because that money's got to come from somewhere.
Absolutely. And, Gene, I took a look at the campaign finance numbers on this late last week, and the group supporting Amendment 2, which is mainly made up of the Missouri Hospital Association, their gigantic hospitals with their multi-million-dollar CEOs, they have spent $10 million on this campaign. That should probably tell you all you need to know about what they hope to get on the backside of this. This is just going to be a windfall for one sector of Missourians, at the detriment of a lot of others that are going to pay for this, including our children, for the next how many generations?
Right. Yeah, and I don't fault anyone for making a good living, but when you're the CEO or at a nonprofit hospital making over $1 million a year, and you're asking for more taxes, I have a problem with that. I mean, again, you know, there's no lack of money in healthcare. There's none. I talked to some people over the weekend talking about have they been flooded with COVID funds for this, that, and the other thing. There is money there. It's how is it being allocated? And in this situation, they want to reallocate our hardworking dollars and allocate them back to other places, hospitals, big doctors groups, to pay these executives. I wish it was as simple as let's provide more affordable health care. There are ways we can do that, but this is not it.
This is definitely
when you
not
start
it.
Subsidizing things, you make them more expensive. Look what they've done to college, right? When they started giving away all this quote unquote free money, college became unaffordable. They've done the same thing with healthcare. The more we subsidize it, the more expensive it gets, and it's on the backs of, you know, us, our kids, our grandkids. They'll be paying for this forever.
Gina, we got about a minute and a half left before I let you go. Mm-hmm. The day after tomorrow, we're going to swiftly switch gears to the general election. We have a very important governor's race, don't we, Gene? With a governor, Mike Parson, who has stood for law and order, who has shepherded us through this coronavirus crisis, versus Nicole Galloway, who. At this point, Gene, I don't think she's weighed in on whether or not we should defund the police. I don't hear anything from Nicole Galloway as to the extreme leftward tilt of the Missouri Democratic Party and whether or not she believes with those in those outlandish lunatic ideas or not.
No, we haven't. You know, and she hasn't disavowed it. That, you know, it's in the new city charter, City Democrats. This is part of their platform. The new chair of the Missouri Democratic Party had a burning cop car on his Twitter banner. She hasn't disavowed any of that. And I can tell you, if we had that, they would be asking, you know, the governor to disavow that. And we heard from Elizabeth Warren last week when she endorsed the trio of Galloway, Kim Gardner, and Jill Shoup. So she put them all in one basket and said, these are my people. So we've got the, you know, the show me squad, as it were, that have been endorsed by Elizabeth Warren. And she doesn't hand those endorsements out easily. So she has grouped Shoup, Gardner, and Galloway all in the same basket. And I think that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, that's a three musketeers right there, I'll tell you what. So, Gina, before I let you go, was the Back the Blue event, I showed up a couple weeks ago at that. Was that successful?
Yeah.
You had at Missouri GOP headquarters here in St. Louis?
Oh, my gosh. It was amazing. We raised over $4,500 for Backstop.
Ah, fantastic.
A huge turnout. Captain Dorn's widow was there. We got to meet a lot of police officers, current and former, and just got to say thank you to them.
Wonderful.
And show them that we support them. It was a fantastic event. And I think, you know, we need to keep letting these police officers know that we do support them, not to listen to the media and blame everything on them. But, to, you know, there's been a lot of officers shot and assaulted. It just happened again last night in St. Louis. This is a dangerous job. And they need our support.
Well, thanks for standing with our brave men and women in blue, Gene. And Gene, thanks for everything you do. Good luck tomorrow for with all of you and yours and all the candidates you'll be watching. Folks, you can follow her at @MoGeneEvans. Gene, we'll have you back as we rocket towards a general election season after the primary is in the books.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, Gene. We'll have you on again soon. Tim Jones in for Annie Fry. We'll be back with lots more show here on 97.1 FM Talk.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.